recordings of like exactly where you are at that moment, as opposed to a more thought out, you know, film production. It's something that we have experience in. And incidentally, we have information back about your platforms at the table, so you can grab those. That stuff back there. Two of Rooftop's signature programs are our home movies program of short films and our New York nonfiction program of short films. And again, I think both of those sort of relate to the cell phone film in certain ways. Do you want to sort of jump in as well?
Sure.
We're going to be just like loosely conversational about this and break in and out and show some stuff and then maybe outline discussion to talk about home movies and New York nonfiction a little bit.
Yeah, our home movies program, I guess we've been doing for 5 years. 5 years now. It's our 5th year doing it. And it's sort of, when we started it, it was a pretty novel concept, the idea of including, creating a special program of short films that we were showing as part of our summer series, which really focused on things that were either literally home movies, things, you know, literally just people documenting their lives sort of off the cuff or, you know, special occasions or something like that, or playing with that form. And I think that's something, you know, sort of before the YouTube era, right on the cusp of when I was about to begin. It was something that, you know, over the years has really expanded as an art form, something that you see sort of all over the place now, both in sort of the, you know, sort of lowbrow form that we're now bombarded with, but also as a, you know, higher-brow form, and, you know, more artistic variation on it. A lot of people playing with that form, the concept of what it is to document yourself, and of course, the ease with which one can now make video, make films and documentaries is obviously facilitated by people. So we've always tried to focus on all of our programming on very personal stories, and that home movie program was specifically something that was sort of taking that to the nth degree and really going all the way with it and saying, like, these are films that are about people, where they live, as they live now, in the moment. So it's something that, you know, is really been close to our programming in all of our programs, but that home movies was a big one. And New York Nonfiction was another program we've been doing even longer than that, which is documentaries about New York, about everyday New Yorkers, about the minutia of everyday New York life, not focusing on Giuliani's, you know, transgressions or scandals or historic, you know, great moments in history of New York, but rather documentaries about everyday New Yorkers will capture moments from people's lives. So it's always been a big part of what we've done.
Yeah. So, you know, that's for, by way of introduction, for us to say that, you know, although we've never done an entire program of cell phone films and, you know, shown just a couple, really, it's something that is very much in line with Rooftop's ethos in general. So, sort of to start off just talking about the cell phone, though, as it's different from, you know, other forms of cameras. I mean, first of all, we should point out that, I mean, Nokia is now the world's largest seller of cameras, more than Canon or Panasonic or anything else. You know, Nokia, because of... So that, you know, everyone now has a camera, it would seem, you know, a video camera in their pocket. The other little statistic that I heard once is that, like, in sort of polls, people being asked, you know, well, what are the two things you never leave your home with? And it's your keys and your cell phone. Like, more than wallets or cards or anything like that, it's keys and cell phones. So your cell phone, which has a video camera, or most of that video cameras are a lot, is now, like, as ubiquitous as, you know, your keys. But how is that different from the way that, like, you know, different revolutions in film recording, motion picture recording, have changed from, you know, the classic 35mm to the invention of 16 and Super 8 and to the prevalence of video? I think the difference is that it's not just something that you can have, but it's something that everyone has without even sort of needing to think about it, that you're just going to have their... Turn off your phone. Well, we shouldn't say turn off.
No, actually, they're on.
Take a picture.
Shoot video.
It's fine. Maybe call. Everyone turn on your phone.
You can put it on vibrate if you insist.
Yeah. I take mine out. But So it's not just ubiquitous the way that video has been, but it's like it's not even a choice anymore. It's just something you have with you. And then the other thing is that as a communication device.
Yes, I mean one of the things that's sort of interesting about the camera phone is it's the first instance where you can actually disseminate your material, get it out to the world with the same thing that you're capturing it with sort of instantaneously. And at this point, YouTube and a couple of other websites, you can actually email video straight from your phone straight to YouTube. It'll transfer it into a format that you can play on YouTube. And there it goes. It doesn't always work. There are glitches. Some phones work better than others. But it's certainly something that down the line is going to be very prevalent. And it's creates this immediacy in a way to transmit this material instantaneously. But one of the things that Mark and I were discussing yesterday as we were sort of going over this is that though it does, on the one hand, there's cell phones both as phones and as camera phones, certainly make it easier for a filmmaker to transmit his, his moment to the world and this little captured moment to get it out there. It's also something that both a cell phone and a camera phone alienate you to a certain extent from the experience that you're actually living in that moment. That's something that many cinematographers and documentary filmmakers have said. Once they're behind the camera, they're no longer there in the moment. They're no longer experiencing things. And the same is true of anyone talking on a cell phone, as many annoying people in cafes over the years have noticed. It definitely is an alienating experience to have someone there talking on a phone. They're communicating with someone else. They're communicating not with you. It's not an exchange anymore. It's more like, what they're removed. And so
it becomes like this anti-communication device, where it's an anti-social device in many ways, even though the act is, talking on the phone, you're conversing with someone, it's social, but in general, actually, it's coming as an anti-social thing. So the way that that affects it as a film medium as well, I think is interesting because it's a communication device, but it's alienating, and the way you've been behind the camera separates you. Well, now it's like even one step further because you're immediately thinking about the transmission of something as opposed to the documentation of it necessarily for posterity or being at the moment as well.
So we're going to go into some other points a little bit more in depth. We wanted to show you guys some of the, got about half an hour total of cell phone videos, which we're going to show you. We're going to break it up into a couple of segments. We wanted to go over just a couple of the basic themes that we're going to be working through, and in a little bit we'll open it up also to a full conversation. Some of these points, I'm sure, we'll be able to elaborate on extensively, and some, we'll sort of just put out there just for you guys to think over. But one of the things that we wanted to focus on in some of our discussions is the difference between the experience of creating and consuming this media. Like on the one hand, the way this is consumed by audiences is often in these little clips of 1 minute, 30 second, 15 second, 20 second videos that you can sort of click through on the web. But the way that an artist who's conceiving of using a cell phone or any sort of disposable camera that eventually will be using to put stuff on the web or wherever, their experience of those moments is very different. They're not thinking in little blocks necessarily. They're still living their lives as artists, sort of finding key moments, things of interest, little sublime seconds, as things are going along. So the question is, how does that differ? Our experience as viewers versus other people's experiences, the filmmaker's experiences as the composer of the media.
And then as viewers, how do we watch them? How are we curating them? Tonight it's kind of interesting because the program is essentially it's still sort of alphabetical by filmmaker name in a kind of stream of material. So, how do we generally watch cell phone videos? Is it in these 1 minute blocks? Do you watch a whole bunch in a row that are and sort of what can you do with them? How should we watch them? What are the different ways that you could potentially curate 15 second, minute long, videos and stuff like that?
Or should? Yeah, you shouldn't. Maybe they're meant to be sort of experienced this way in sort of random order. Also talk a little bit about some of the genres of the cell phone video. There's, in some ways it's sort of this anarchic medium, but there's certainly on most of the websites that you'll see, and even within You know, there's a few places where videos like this are curated. There's definitely a few sort of main themes or genres of cell phone video that seem to be made and seem to be chosen and picked by the audience as something that they really want to focus on. And just discussing like how much, how the aesthetics, which goes into our next point, how the aesthetics of the cell phone video, like what it's capable of, what it's not capable of, does that influence the genres? Like, does that influence what people shoot on it? Does that influence what we're attracted to or what we can appreciate amongst the stuff that's shot on, you know, this rather primitive medium as of right now?
And finally, sort of what's the future of the form, you know, as cell phones, you know, undoubtedly get better and better resolution and audio on the cameras, you know, will it change, what we do with them and how to use them? So those are the sort of basic points which we'll hit, but we thought it would make sense for about half an hour worth of video stuff, so we'll watch about 15 minutes of it, and then, come back. With these nice small monitors, it's just like watching them on the phone.
We're going to join you in the audience. So, yeah, it gives you a little taste of some of what's out there in the world of more artistically oriented cell phone videos. I think one thing that I think is interesting to me about seeing this collection of work is I was reminded of the work done by a group of filmmakers called Red Book Films, and we showed a feature film there last week. But they also make these little short clips that are very much like this. A lot of them are shot on cell phone videos, and they're called Buttons, and you can watch them online, or they sell the DVD as well. And basically what they are is just little captured moments, like very many of the clips that you saw in this bag, just little strange things, little funny weird moments, little sublime, like little video vignettes, many of which they just capture just as they're walking about the city and observing things. And the reason I was reminded of that is that I think often people often derive what is happening to attention spans in the internet era and all the things that, all the ways in which people don't read longer material anymore, and they're, so used to flipping around, and people don't have the patience to sit through longer art films, and that we're, generating a short attention span generation. When I see this work, the one thing that strikes me is that though the consumption of art is, in this form is definitely very different. It's definitely very short, choppy, quick little bits of information. When I watch these films, I think about the first thing that occurs to me is how artists like that are actually living their lives and what it means for them to have a camera with them all the time. It doesn't make them, some of us with our cell phones, and I'm certainly guilty of this, are constantly distracted and constantly, on our way to work, on our Blackberries and emailing people, not paying any attention to what's going on around us. But that very same cell phone is being used by certain people as just one more way to, one more excuse, one more medium by which they can pay attention to all the little things around them, just as a 19th century poet would. Just picking up all these little moments and passing them along, digesting them, finding the ones that they find meaningful and passing them along to people. And it's not necessarily removing them from the moment, even if they are on their cell phone cameras.
Yeah, so that's sort of the idea of, the difference between producing this media and consuming this media and the way that we experience it, and that, the result of our viewing is the short attention span, sort of cultivating the short attention span, but for the camera holder, it's sort of to be constantly engaged in, like, everything. It could be something that could become a video at any moment, it could just be any little incident walking down the street. And
maybe that's unchanged. Maybe that's, that's the way the people who are producing this work, maybe they would have been writing poems 100 years ago, maybe they would have been writing short stories, maybe they, all these little moments would be things they'd be filing away to put into their novels at some point. At this point, yes, it's expressed differently and it's put out there differently, but is the life of the artist changed? And if it's not, then short attention spans don't necessarily, in this way, isn't going to lead to any sort of diminishment of our, what is being produced and what's being put out there, and the really poignant observations that are being done by artists.
I think another thing that's interesting to note when you watch these sort of films is that we were talking before about the sort of, disengagement of the filmer, and the fact that you have this phone. I think in terms of when you watch it all together like this, unlike when you're watching a crisper video, you're sort of more aware of the medium. So again, it's sort of a big difference between the way that we watch these films and the way we experience them. This is sort of the most raw way that someone can make a video. It's completely immediate, in that it's just like in everybody's pocket, they pull them out. But when you watch them, because of the low quality and the nature of like just in and out and in and out, the sort of you're not ever going to watch a cell phone video like these and have that kind of transformative experience where, for 2 hours you just have no idea where you are. The way you are transported when you watch certain feature films. And so again, the medium is completely engaging for the viewer, but sort of distancing for the viewer. For completely engaging for the recorder and
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, I think that that's something that you've always seen, you know, every step along the way when sort of these, you know, when video cameras first came along and people were creating sort of very raw video art pieces or making films or shooting, you know, sort of the no-wave like film scene of, like in the Lower East Side 30 years ago. I think, without a doubt, like having that low-grade medium that it makes you aware of the filmmaker, it makes you aware of the person behind the camera in a certain way, that this thing was produced, that this thing was, you know, that this is not something that you can lose yourself in.
And yet these are more anonymous though at the same time, because they're so, you know, like there's a certain artlessness to it as well, which is, you know, part of the charm, is that like anyone can do it in any moment. Like it, and you know, you're not worried about, oh, it's 35mm and it's perfectly lit, or you know, it's HD and it's, you know, exactly right in every regard, even with a documentary, that, you know, the standards of like feature on documentaries in terms of production value has gone up so much. But these are, you know, the empowering thing, of course, is that like anyone can do it at any moment, and, you know, it could find a viewership and find, you know, millions of views. We were going to do a Q&A afterwards, but I think we can jump in here and there. It does sort of get into our next point, though, about curation as well, with that clip in particular, because, I mean, there's all sorts of random ways that people are going to encounter this stuff. A friend might just, like, show you on their phone, a friend might email it to you, you might have an email to you from, you know, a stranger who, you know, just saw something on YouTube or Blipkey or whatever and, like, sent it along. And then from there, you could also, you know, obviously there's this new sort of strange computer-generated you know, free association, which is now going on with YouTube, where it's like you watch one video of, you know, your friend's cute cat, and then, you know, like, oh, here's 10 related videos, and you start watching all the other videos of cute cats, including ones of, like, you know, that aren't anymore, like, cute cats. So to talk about, like, the role of these videos, these 30-second, minute-long videos, and the way we watch them, the way they're curated, is another sort of point. And as it relates to that film, and then, you know, Dan can talk more about the creation. As it relates to that film, it's interesting because, you know, those two films back to back, it goes from the man riding on the street to the Christmas tree falling down the street. And that's one of the sort of rare moments where, within these videos where there is a kind of, you know, curated, it, you know, in this instance, where there's kind of a curated trajectory from one film to the next, where, you know, there are these parallels. And sometimes you get wonderful things from random juxtaposition, sometimes it's from, you know, things that are clearly, you know, oh, two things riding the street, one's a tree, and one, you know, one's kind of horrifying, and one's got a big laugh.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, like, definitely. One of the things that I think is also really interesting about putting these things together and relates to what we're saying about the relationship that the viewer has to the filmmaker in these instances is that across the board, whether you're talking about artists or whether you're talking about, you know, just people putting up pictures of their cute cats and stuff like that, like the cell phone video is essentially primary function is to share an experience, like some little bit of an experience, like a very and it's not high def and it doesn't look amazing and it's not going to encompass everything. And it's only going to be a short, it's only going to be a minute or whatever. You know, like most cell phones can't have that much video on them before they run out of space on their internal memory or whatever. But so as a result, like it's really just like these very still little moments, you know, these very small clips of someone's life. So when stuff gets curated together and put together like this, the one thing just putting stuff in order, just a bunch of things by you know, just by filming, you don't even necessarily have to, you know, try to make themes. And inevitably, just like the things that person's picking out, you just start to feel like a kinship with this anonymous person, you know, this person that you don't really know, who's not really expressing himself in any particular way, his him or herself in any particular way, but they are, but you start feeling like you've been living their experiences, but in only a very generalized way, and sort of makes the act of curation a little bit complicated, because then, you know, there is an appeal to this sort of the way we normally watch cell phone videos, just like flipping through YouTube or whatever, or on just someone's reel or something like that, is there's an appeal to these things just being assembled sort of as they are, like little bits of people's lives. And I think that it's hard often to curate a program of films like this, because trying to fine-tune connections or link the themes too much almost seems unnatural. Like the appeal of these films is they're just clips of life, just little things. You're experiencing life the way that this filmmaker experiences things, at least when he's in this poetic mood and decides to pay attention to people on the street. And so the question is, like, is there another way to curate these things? Like, should they be put in a way? Or maybe is the free association best?
Well, it almost would take it out of its, you know, I mean, you could create these. I mean, when we watch them, you know, just the whole 30 minutes together, you know, you do find these little sub-themes and connections and stuff like that. But it is this kind of new, you know, free associative type of narrative, which I think also just relates to the way that people, like human beings, you know, generally try to create narratives for, like, everything in their lives. And, you know, it's the way we organize our memory to, you know, the way we feel emotion is generally sort of through some kind of narrative and connection. When you watch things like this, it's real life, but there's something that can be kind of enjoyable to, you know, trying to make a little story or trying to bring together different themes. I mean, it would be kind of fun to get, you know, a million videos or whatever and try to find, you know, create a narrative somehow from, like, oh, guy walking down the street and he was wearing a brown jacket, and then it's the next guy wearing a brown jacket, and then, you know, who are all these different people. There was actually that movie, the video surveillance movie, that was like all this footage from video surveillance cameras that did create a kind of meta-narrative of, like, boy meets girl and, you know, there was, like, a bank robbery or something like that.
Yeah, it was all points that they found, like, in various religions. Yeah.
It was just all pulled, and, you know, so...
But it felt a looking for it.
Yeah, definitely.
In the end, it wasn't nearly as appealing as just a bunch of wonderful little vignettes, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's cute, but it seemed forced as well.
Because it's putting the curator sort of above the artist and above the experience, you know, something that's, you know, I think generally doesn't work very well. It's like,
I know that there was actually a contest. I wasn't able to find out what happened, but it was announced at Tribeca this year where Nokia was doing a contest where people would just send in all these films, and Spike Lee was going to make a movie out of all of it. Like, he was going to edit together a film out of all these different clips that were sent his way. And I was looking around, and I remember it was million announcements at Tribeca, because they've got a pretty good publicity machine. And then I couldn't find out what actually happened with the editing. Yeah, that's this year. It's in April, so I don't know, maybe he's still editing. But yeah, I mean,
there's another movie out.
I'm sorry?
There's another movie out.
Yeah, maybe that's the one. I don't know, it didn't look like it when I saw the preview. But yeah, I mean, I think my personal opinion would be that you know, as these films exist, they probably do play out better this way. And, you know, trying to force too much meaning into them is really just destroying what makes them special and what really makes them enjoyable.
Yeah.
I have a question, kind of from a sort of involving playback. You know, in terms of,
this Apex Art put together this particular compilation, so I can't really say who's We couldn't play it, showed it up on the computer.
Or giving out like 50 cons.
Yeah,
I was just passed around the cons.
If we had been on key sponsorship, you all would have got
a few
cons. They didn't respond to it.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting because, I mean, the mechanism. I mean, a video camera is also a playback device. A film camera obviously isn't, but video cameras are. But obviously,
people often share that with. I mean, people often record something on their phone. They don't necessarily.
I feel like it
can't necessarily figure out how to email it to Google or to YouTube or whatever. But you show it to your coworkers. Or
yeah, whatever. I mean, I think that's something actually with a cell phone video that's even more than with a video camera is like it is also the exhibition medium. The camera is the exhibition medium. Well, which is different in that, again, like you've got it in your pocket. I mean, most people shoot a video, and unless you're right there with someone, people are like, oh, look what I just got. You're not going to, like, go to a party and be like, oh, look at this funny thing I shot today. Or, like, oh, here's, excerpts from my full-length documentary on my, HD camera. But this stuff, yeah, I mean, it's meant to be also watched on these size screens. That just sort of makes it more immediate as the technology, more part of the experience.
Yeah, I think that lack of delay is also something essential to it. I mean, I think all of these things, all of these films, I think, have an even more appeal knowing that they, if I told you that all this stuff was shot on, like, a low-fi camera 15 years ago, I think it would sort of mean something different to us than it does right now. And I mean, the fact that you can upload this stuff immediately, I think that immediate sharing of experience is actually part of the appeal. I mean, one of the things that I sort of, Mark and I disagreed a little bit on this earlier, but I sort of felt that a lot of these films would mean something, like, in really subtle ways, mean something very different, even just a few years from now. Maybe substantially, a good distance from now. Like, the one image with the guy playing accordion walking down the street, you just see him from behind. Like, that right there, like, the fact that it's shot on a cell phone, which is very modern medium. He's obviously walking down a modern street. He's playing this old world instrument. Like that right there, like seems particularly poignant, and for that reason, that it is, this instrument seems particularly lonely and out of place because there's some kid with a cell phone like recording this to like YouTube his friends about it, and that just sort of changes the meaning. 50 years from now, when no one, when people, according to have long been extinct, no one have any idea where they're from. Does that video mean the same things it does to us right now? I think there's some more videos, I think, in the second half that I think sort of make that point a little bit even more clearly.
The other thing about immediacy and sort of getting back to the idea that it's this anti-communication device is that, as a communication device in the hands of an artist, like how does it change the way that you relate an experience? If you walk down the street, you see something funny, and you don't have a camera with you, maybe you've got a phone, but it doesn't have a camera on it, you call up, and you're like, oh man, I just saw this crazy thing, and you're telling your friend what you just saw, but there's a process of
retelling
and remembering that goes into it. Now, the immediacy takes that away, because you can just shoot it, and then, you can just shoot it.
Back for you.
Yeah, exactly. You can shoot the something and then just send it out to the web and immediately also email refer to your friends and just be like, there, I just saw it, and like obviously that changes the way that people will remember things, and I think it's not to say that, like, it's better or worse the same way that short attention span for me is not necessarily better or worse. It's just a different sort of experience.
Yeah, but I think that, there's two things going on, though, I think. Let me leave that point for the second half, because we're going to talk about aesthetics. But relating to some of this stuff.
We're going to show more stuff now and then come back to a couple more points. But
you have something that relates to
it. We have the questions, yeah.
I have some questions about how you're defining artists, because you talked about how everyone has fun, everyone can do this stuff, everyone can capture a moment and send it out. And then you're talking about, like, the poet kind of spirit of the artist who's capturing a moment. So I'm just curious, how is if everyone who does this an artist, or there's a certain mindset or definition of artists that you're kind of using when you think about people who are creating these particular kind of videos?
I think, as an organization, I think Mark and I are like having curator group up all these years, we're pretty much in agreement on this. Like, I personally don't have much of an interest in trying to define what makes a moment artistic or not. I mean, the truth of it is, like, you know, that panda sneezing video is, like, as Mark was saying yesterday, like, that panda sneezing video is high art as far as I'm concerned. You know, I mean, I think, you know, most people at this, I think a lot of people, younger people at this point, sort of feel like, you know, a moment means what it means, and a moment capture on itself, you know, it means what it means to you, and I think, you know, I think we're all having grown up in the postmodern world that we're in, and trying to define, you know, who's doing art and who's not. I don't see much of a point in it personally. I mean, I think, you know, the argument can go on forever and ever. You know, but I do think, you know, certainly the stuff that I respond to as a curator and as a viewer is some of the stuff that I think is, you know, is going for those moments that are truly unique, those moments that really, you know, are obviously that have a second level of meaning, at least to me, you know, that have, that, you know, and that pan sneezing, like, I don't need to bring that up over and over again, but that moment, which is like the kitschiest, most watched video on the face of the earth, like, seeing that look of, like, startle and then concern on the face of the panda, it's like, that right there is sublime. Like, that's great. That's wonderful. And you know, anyone who could script a moment or get a performance like that out of an actor would be thrilled, you know, because it just sort of sums up this experience of a mother with a baby and being afraid of it and concerned and not sure what to do. It's, you know, and so as viewers, I think that's how we respond to things often. You know?
And I think it does sort of say, you know, we're actually saying that we're making everyone an artist in a certain way, that we'll value it either way. And then, you know, just, you know, more specifically for Rooftop as well, like, I mean, we've always said that we've shown the work of, like, experienced artists and non-professionals, and some of the films we cherish the most that we've shown are films by people who do not consider themselves filmmakers and artists at all, but who are like, this is something wonderful that I've recorded or made. You know, people who have something they saw or something to say, and they just want to share it with the world, and the medium happened to sort of be, you know, motion pictures.
And maybe those filmmakers who we've seen sort of their amateur work, and it's just astonishingly meaningful to us, and not just us, but to our wide audiences. I mean, we get, you know, certainly we have a lot of filmmakers and artists who come out to our screens, but we also get a lot of people who are, you know, just, you know, accountants and bankers who thought it was cool to watch a movie on the roof. And, you know, we'll definitely find a lot of this sort of home movie footage sort of stuff that's put together, and it'll be universally appealing, and our audience will love it, and they'll think it's great. And that, you know, that those same amateur filmmakers might turn around and make some, you know, make a narrative short film for their next project, and it might not work. You know, it's, I mean, I think, you know, we're sort of, it's not a concern to us whether someone is actually a genius or is capable of doing a great variety of fantastic things. Like, we're going to show the works that we think are meaningful.
Yeah.
And going back to a couple of things you guys mentioned earlier, one being dissemination of a message or a content, and the other being, you know, these videos being part of a personal narrative that, you know, we're only pretty good at 15 or 30 seconds of. I was wondering if you could talk at all about the relationship you guys see as filmmakers between videos like this and the things we're surrounded by in the room, these scrawlings, and how, you know, how they intertwine, how they relate to each other, or has one replaced the other.
It's interesting.
By one replace the other, you mean like sort of these sort of found moments, these or found art replacing constructed art of some sort?
Yeah. I mean, I don't see that as one replacing the other. I mean, I think that there's, you know, in terms of the stuff that's here, you know, one thing that's certainly changing, you know, in New York and America is, you know, just particularly in the, you know, Giuliani cleans all this stuff up, and then Bloomberg, like, monetizes it. Like, you know, Giuliani just says it won't be anywhere, and then Bloomberg tries to sell, like, all that as advertising space. And that is, you know, a large part, like, all these video screens on, like, subway entrances and bus stops and stuff like that. And so I think that the, you know, on a very general level, you know, motion picture media, you know, and more thought-out media is changing and being, you know, replacing stuff like this, you know, little plans for all things. But I think there's also, I think that the cell phone videos are are very similar in terms of the sort of immediacy of them, and like the way that they might be linked, I think would be different, would be the similarity, the most important similarity, where you're viewing them and how, like, in that, you know, if you make a cell phone video, you still gotta get someone to, like, find it online. So, you know, what are the tags and keywords and that sort of stuff? This are actually the sort of new versions of, like, colored paper and other things like that, using search terms.
Well, I think there's a couple of points sort of going off of what you're saying that I think are interesting. One is that, A, how difficult it is to monetize material like this. So, which is something that, like, you know, immediately, like, it, you know, to a certain degree makes it appealing. Just because the people working in this medium absolutely, I mean, are not going to make money off of it. And you'll see some of this stuff sort of, you know, co-opted, either faked or actually, you know, like, just take web videos and they'll turn them into commercials. But, like, that's one in a million. Like, one in a million even YouTube hits actually becomes, like, whatever, an AIT commercial or something like that. And all of those commercials are actually really nice commercials. Like, those little ones, people, you know, with their babies doing something weird, like, they make actually good commercials. It's actually, you know, not even, it makes watching television a little bit less offensive sometimes. But the truth of it is, most of the people doing this, they're not even moving in the direction. I mean, obviously, making any short film, you're not going to make a ton of money. But making short films like this, you're not even moving in the direction. You know, you're not going to get a meeting with a studio editor because you make the greatest cell phone, like, sort of observational vignette. No one's gonna, it doesn't get you anywhere in terms of your, you know, sort of mainstream career, which is nice, and I think it creates a mindset.
But I mean, they are trying, as you were pointing out also, that there's, like, you know, one of the most prevalent places that are, like, curating cell phone videos is, like, competitions sponsored by cell phone companies.
Right. And it's the easiest way to watch cell phone videos is to go to the cell phone company website.
And they're really just, like, they're not necessarily about the art form, they're just advertising. It's the same way when Deadpool sponsors a web video competition, it's really just to get people to, like, keep going to Deadpool.com to, like, look at videos and, like, see Deadpool's name. You know, but it does have this strange effect of making these little videos become, you know, a new form of advertising.
Yeah, the other thing related to your point that I just want to say is that the one thing it does do in sort of changing people's perceptions is that having so many of these, like, very, you know, realistic little moments is that I think being exposed to these on a regular basis and the, you know, mass audience is being exposed to it, I think it does sensitize people to contrivance in mainstream media. You know, that you just, I think people, you know, just like when you go into a theater, to go see a play, you're willing to, you know, let down your, you know, you suspend your disbelief and sort of allow that this is actually in Moscow and whatever. You know, I think that you have this, you used to have much more of that same thing with television and film. But just having more and more of this stuff that people are looking at a visual medium recorded on their television or on their computer monitor, that it's not like that. It sort of sensitizes people to bad acting and, like, contrived scenarios and all these little things that are totally forced. And it's one of those things, like, when you see these cell phone companies or any companies trying to turn web video into, you know, create their own fake viral marketing campaigns and stuff like that using stuff like this, it doesn't really work. You know, they really can't create these fake viral campaigns, you know, because people see through it really quickly because you're just exposed to the more natural video.
I think we'll maybe we'll take one more question and then watch the rest of the stuff. But I was just also going to make one last point about, you know, the relation of the stuff here in Sprawl and cell phones. It would just be really interesting if people were exhibiting cell phone videos the same way that this is essentially exhibited, like standing under a lamppost and just being like, hey, watch my cell phone video. Mm-hmm. You know, if you just had, like, hundreds of people just being like, hey, come here, watch this video. Like, here, 45 seconds, watch, you know, and in the street. Really be interesting because it is such a mobile medium.
I just have one question about curation. I mean, you seem to be clear about the fact that, you know, the curator's job is not to have an agenda, but basically to be invisible and all inclusive. But where do you find yourself in the videos, and how do people present them to you? Will you seek them out, or are they just put out an open call? How do you find them?
Well, it's not necessarily that we're meant to be invisible as curators. Mm-hmm. You know, I think with this material, it's a matter of, like, finding the right voice for the material as a whole. You know, certain times, I think curation is like beneficial to the work. And I think with like some of our programs, you know, a lot of the short film programs that Rooftop puts together do have very specific themes. You know, and like we did a program called like Making the Mission that was all about people's you know, on a mission of some kind, and like that the idea of, you know, the act of trying to do something is even greater than the whole. And I think that those films, some of them which were kind of abstract and you know, maybe, you know, almost experimental, you know, got into this new context and benefited or even, you know, highlighted. I think with this stuff, though, the point that we're making, although it's, you know, I think it, you can take it in any different direction, but the point that, you know, we're making is, like, to actually, like, put too much of it together in a theme would just, like, start to feel contrived, because the themes are so loose when they're originally shot. It's just like, oh, here's my experience, here's my experience, here's my experience. So to take those little moments of experience and try to say, like, oh, this is what, you know, New York City in 2008 is like, or something like that, or like, here's people's experience of, you know, even something like being drunk in New York City in 2008 would sort of, you know, not necessarily add more to the data.
In terms of where we get our films, when we see submissions, so we get submissions from all over, we go out to festivals, we check stuff out, we, so you know, we take recommendations from people if anyone knows any good videos online or elsewhere, we'll just check them out.
Right. So you don't lease, so, I mean, but by virtue of going to festivals and finding them that way, that implies that there's a certain amount of certain degree of self-consciousness of that artistic value to actually having them in a festival.
I think a lot of the stuff here is definitely. I mean, I know a lot of like several of these filmmakers. I mean, they're, you know, they don't work exclusively in the cell phone medium. You know, and there are the filmmakers who, you know, happen to capture some of their films when they're working home. The only camera they have is their cell phone. Some of them make sort of a self-conscious effort, like the filmmakers that make the little buttons. Like they, so, you know, they make a self-conscious effort to go out with these disposable cameras as part of this mission that they're on, is to capture these things in these little snippets and to convey them. But
and I think that with these videos, I mean, there are things at Rooftop that we show that we see online that are not necessarily like submitted as art, but they're just like amusing things that someone put online. They're like, oh, that's good. And it's certainly something that we're very excited about as programmers too. I mean, we receive submissions and we try to reach out to all different places that aren't just, you know, film festivals and art galleries and that sort of stuff, but that are, you know, just people making media and not necessarily for the purpose of it being shown at a film festival. So
the potential for radical content in this fourth medium is extraordinary.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, how much of that do you actually get, you know?
Well, it's hard. I mean, it's hard to reach people who aren't trying to find a film festival, you know. But
right.
You know, I mean, that sort of stuff is just in like our little, you know, marketing devices, which is saying, like, we'll accept anything. Don't worry about production values. Don't worry about, you know, that sort of stuff. If you have an interesting bunch of pictures, send it to us. And of course, by not just simply advertising in film festival publications, but, you know, putting out postcards and stuff.
And people will recommend stuff because filmmakers who know what sort of stuff appeals to us, they'll say, yes, that was a crazy video or a gallery, or my friend makes these really weird, like, little projects. You should check them out. So.
I only watched the last section of the videos.
Thank you.
right off the bat, though, is, I mean, I was walking from the back of the room, it's interesting that, like, you kind of can't tell how poor the video quality is. Like, that pixelation and the chunkiness is lost when you're, like, really far away. I guess it's the same as, you know, like, relatively speaking, when you're watching it on a phone, like, the pixels are small enough.
In front row,
yeah, exactly. And then just, like, moved back up and saw all the pixels. So it's another way that, like, the viewership sort of changes things by, like, you know, just holding it farther away, you get less detail, but by getting less detail, everything's sort of more pristine, you know. But to talk about genres and aesthetics a little bit.
Yeah, one of the things we were sort of noticing, I think there's definitely a distinction between cell phone videos and sort of disposable videos that they exist in the world, you know, generally on YouTube, etc., and what you see, obviously, in the art gallery. But there's a great number of similarities between, like, amongst even both those genres. So we were sort of going through, and I'm sure there's something we missed, but there's a few things that you see that is so prevalent that people use in their cell phone art or cell phone documentation pretty much across the board. One, far and away the most popular form of cell phone art is documentation of fences and planks. Like, if you go online, like, besides, like, all the Nokia-sponsored festival stuff, which obviously Google's out because they're good at that stuff, the stuff that you find, like, the, you know, 20 of the top 30 things are going to be just these horrible things that happen. Like, the hanging of Saddam Hussein is one of them, which was captured on a camera phone. Some footage captured on a camera phone at the Virginia Tech shootings, things like that. Like, that's far and away like what's most prevalent. And then also you have documentation of abuses by bicyclists, protesters, by the NYPD, things like that. And without a doubt, I mean, I think we'd be remiss to not, like, mention that at least, that is, you know, something that from, like, documentary filmmaking perspective, I mean, it's very important. I mean, the fact that, you know, like, we can bemoan being surveilled by the government all the time by all the cameras that go around. But the flip side of that is that any protest, there's two-thirds of the people out there in the crowd have cameras of some sort. They can document this stuff. And as a result, you know, this stuff gets out there. And, you know, don't even necessarily make it look better, but at least bad guys look bad. Some of the other things that I think cross over here, and you see some of it here, is kitsch. There's no doubt that people feel like capturing these kitschy moments, whether artistically or just for fun, it definitely seems very fitting, and is not. And the experience of catching these sort of kitschy things, like my favorite video of all these, is that wildly flailing, inflatable, like things on anywhere apart, which. Like that, you know, that certainly you can make a really nice high depth video of that, but I don't know if it would be a better experience than watching this really grainy, broken footage. Like, it seems even that much more ridiculous when you just sort of see it in the abstract and in this low res format. And so I think, and, you know, and also kitsch, I think, I think also the reason that you see so much of these funny, kitschy little videos is it also works really well in short format, as does capturing offenses and things like that. Like, all these things almost are more meaningful, and, like, the essence of the meaning is captured more completely in low-res, short format video. Because, I mean, anything kitschy, when stared at too long, starts to seem less and less funny and more boring, and it does you no good. And you know, high-def image of, like, some funny little chashka doesn't really make it funnier. It doesn't really expand the experience. Similarly, like, a high-def video of a policeman battering a bicyclist, almost like the minutia of those events, like, might actually even make the impact less powerful. You know, if you could actually see all the subtleties in it, you know, to a certain extent, like, if we're talking about, like, video as a propaganda tool, the grainier the better, to a certain extent, leads more to the imagination. And the shorter the better, too. All you catch is the cop hitting the bicyclist in the head. You don't see those, you know, the bicyclists earlier sort of screaming in the cop's face or calling him a pig. You just catch that one moment, and that's where it is, you know. And I'm not taking sides, well, certainly not taking the sides of the bicyclist. But the truth of it is, this is a propaganda tool. Like, it's more effective to be short. The more that's there, the more subtlety it's let into the art, the more there's to argue about. And then finally, some of the thing that you see most prevalent in art projects that you see people coming in from a strictly artistic perspective is these sublime little moments. And it's really a genre in and of itself. And we get a great number of really wonderful short film movies. Shot on camera phones or cheap cameras or such a similarity to us. They're really just capturing loneliness, capturing these moments of sublime loneliness, which I don't know if I think it must relate to the experience of the distancing effect that one has with the cell phone and the camera between you and the audience. But you see so much of it captured. Just people, how often do you sit on the subway and think about, wow, that one old lady is just so lonely looking right now. I'm sure everyone does, have those moments, but you see it so much in this art. And I think perhaps that relates also to these settings. The fact that it's raining, the fact that you lose the details, it makes it more universal, it makes it a more universal concept. You know, you're not thinking about focusing on her, you're not focusing on where she is or where she's from or the fact that she doesn't actually look like your grandmother who she kind of reminds you of. You're noticing, you're just thinking vaguely, generally, this is, a person having this experience, and you can project more upon it.
And again, as a tool also, a cell phone, different from a small portable camera, adds to the voyeurism, to the ease with which you can be a voyeur, because you can sort of fake it, if you have a camera, it's just a camera, you can't really be doing anything else with it. But if you have a phone, you can be pretending to take a photo, you can be pretending to talk on the phone, texting, whatever you might be doing, and then you can capture these little moments, that much easier at a phone as opposed to a camera.
Which almost adds to the loneliness, because, you can be capturing something, you see it all the time, someone's sort of covertly capturing these little moments. I mean, if I saw someone having a particularly, melancholy moment on a train, pull out the camera and put it on them, they'd break out of it pretty quickly. But if you just sort of pretend you're texting and capture it on your cell phone, you can still be totally distant from them, and, even in, very near proximity. And I think, it just happens to be that a covert little camera like that actually seems to be a really good way to capture these moments without really participating in it.
But also, with having that phone and pretending that you're not taking a photo of someone, it is, again, this anti-communication device. If you have to take out your, 35mm camera, still camera, and, focus and frame and stuff like that, obviously, you're participating with that person a little bit more, whereas if you can do it surreptitiously, you're sort of ducking the fact that you're engaging that person in some way or another. I think it's also interesting to point out the genres that we don't see a lot of in these videos are really just sort of moods and things like that. Three things that stand out to me are genuine romance. There's lots of kitschy, hey, I love you sort of videos, but there's nothing that's very little that's genuinely moving in terms of romance. And similarly, there's not a lot of nostalgia or a lot of empathy. There's the video of the guy writhing on the ground, and I think, you have more of this sort of voyeuristic, what the heck's going on, sort of thing, other than, feeling oh my God, what's happening to that poor man, or something like that. And so I think we were trying to figure out the different components of why you wouldn't have romance, empathy, and nostalgia within this. I think a lot of the stuff we talk about in terms of the distancing and the immediacy is certainly part of it. But I think there's something in the aesthetics of it as well that is just sort of alienating even to people who've grown up with video as a medium. And we were sort of saying to each other before how watching videos of from the late 70s and early 80s when we were growing up, my own video home movies, the way that the images break up and become pixelated, it just doesn't evoke the same sort of nostalgia that Super 8 as a medium immediately has this, it's so cliche to just say oh yeah, shooting Super 8, and then it's somebody's memory. It's soft and it's well lit, and then there's camera leaks and light leaks and stuff. It's part of the beauty of it. It sort of adds to the physical process, and therefore to the experience as a viewer, knowing hearing that little bit of the projector whir or the camera whir is it adds to it. Whereas with cell phone videos, the more it breaks up, the more alienated you are in general. There's no sort of connection to the pixels that you say oh yeah, that's sweet, you know. It's just like, oh, but, you know, there's just a glitch in the one of the arrows.
Well, I have to say, well, sorry, the idea of pixelation is something that now visually everyone's a lot more can really relate to in terms of the kind of visual language of medium, whereas, you know, obviously Super 8 and Angular and things, they're almost out of the vocabulary. They're not even in, you know, the parents' house anymore. They're practically, you know, they're left for those who are interested in it. You know, there's like this, you know, people are trying to tell people, no, take these out, don't convert them to digital, and like, let's play around with these Super 8s. It's kind of like the Wonder Years aesthetic, you know, it's something that now the generation don't really have any connection to it, but it's a nice aesthetic. Like, the idea of pixelation is really the kind of visual language, I think, of not, it's interesting because there's the high definition of the kind of mass media, but really in terms of what people have accessible to use for their everyday is really rudimentary. You have basically no sound. You have this weird return to silent motion picture in a weird capacity, or really like very bad audio. And
the worst audio.
Yeah.
It's what you get out of it.
Cool and interesting, but what it's just different from film and media is in that it doesn't, it's like, it is more alienating and nostalgic. But again, with the image quality, it's always been just sort of a truism that, you know, humans can watch a really dark, grainy, blurry video, but bad audio is really hard to put up with. You know, like, you just, if you can't hear or it's just like white noise, you know, it's, you know, people's attention just disappears. So in this context, actually watching things, you know, virtually silent, a lot, most of those videos do have audio, it's just usually so quiet, it does make them sort of, you know, more palatable. But there's certain videos in there, in the first batch that we watched, the art parade and the swimming party and stuff like that, that, you know, Dan described them as like an assault. You know, it's just like, you know, when you're there, I'm sure it's like, oh, it's a fun party, it's just loud, everyone's talking, you have distinct voices, but in this context, it just becomes like, you know, yeah, not engaging and not like charming, but like, yeah, just kind of like a chaos of noise, and then we're like, again, not nostalgic, but...
And also, it becomes a different, like, becomes a different form altogether. Like, I don't think, like, maybe very many people, if they went to that art parade, would have been like, oh, that's totally what it was like. Because the experience of just hearing that assault of noise, it's like, oh, that's a horrible way to think about it. I mean, it's cool as a film, but plainly, like, you know, those kids are having fun. If they were listening to audio like we were listening, they would not be having nearly as much fun. And I think, you know, the same thing with the piece I really love of the tree blowing down the street, which if you took out the audio and you shot this on, you know, and shot it on HD, you can make a really poetic film about, you know, like a tree rolling down the street. It could, you know, even if you just took out the audio, it could be like, oh, this really, you know,
sweet little moment.
But with the audio, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, you can think of it as a really lovely moment. But with the audio and the assault of the audio, it becomes something very different. It becomes something that really just, poor trees, they just torture. And that's the reason I think, like, I don't think that these cell phone videos are necessarily going to be very evocative of memories. And, you know, and I think also what Mark was saying about, like, there's very little empathy, and I think by that I sort of meant, like, empathy with a particular individual, because I think also the sound's almost never very good, it's just very hard to relate to the people individuals, so these silent moments and these lonely moments and these quiet moments might be evocative, but anything, you know, that actually has an interaction or a language to it just becomes an assault and becomes something that you don't, you know, it becomes an art, but, you know, it doesn't, it's not documentation that would make you nostalgic for that moment.
Yeah, in terms of nostalgia, I mean, isn't the iPhone the ultimate adult toy? And so, I mean, in terms of nostalgia, maybe it's a sort of nostalgia for toys. In relation to what you're talking about, Super 8, then for a hot moment there was like Pixel Vision, remember those, which were essentially children's camera recorded onto a magnetic tape.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so, I mean, maybe, I know it's sort of maybe stretching.
where it's like BlackBerry is marketed as like work tomorrow.
Cool.
You know, like it's like you can email anywhere, you can look at attachments, and like both devices kind of do similar things. But like, you know, it's just sort of different marketing things and different ways that people use them, you know, as well. I mean, there are people who, you know, play with their phones and watch videos and, you know, do all that stuff all the time. And then there's people who, I mean, personally, like, when I'm talking about how we never really shoot video with our phones, you know, but we're constantly being like, you know, text messaging, checking an email and stuff like that. Another sort of a couple of other, not genres, but little like aesthetic things which are I think that the phones could do, but you know, don't necessarily. You know, one that comes up a lot is, I mean, we saw very little dialogue in these films, but one thing that is necessary shooting with a phone would be if you did want to record any dialogue, you need to be really close to the person because the audience can be so bad. So if you want any kind of voice, you know, you're going to have to be like right in their face. So it's often going to, you know, also like remove context, and then, you know, that sort of changes like the way that people are, you know, talking about it. It's like, well, why are you shooting them? If they're describing the scene behind them, if they're going to have to like describe a little more, it's not like a video camera where you could have the person and the scene. And so getting like, you know, there's a voyeuristic side, but then there's also like getting right in someone's face, you know, hey, what are you doing here? And that sort of stuff is kind of an interesting, you know, aesthetic that is, you know, out there and part of it. And another thing is, as someone mentioned before, about how the blurriness and the pixelation creates a kind of, you know, intrigue. Another genre that I think is been actually exploited more in like mainstream videos than in like minimal cell phone videos is that kind of suspense and you know, tension and horror almost. There's the video of the UFO in Moscow that was in the first half, where you don't know what you're looking at, and it's really kind of terrifying. And you see the same similar things, obviously, mainstream movies like Cloverfield or Blair Witch Project, where, or any horror film, where it's like, because you don't know, you know, what the monster looks like, where things are, it's too dark, it's scary. But, you know, that would be something that someone would have to very carefully contrive with a cell phone, is just use that horrible pixelation and bad sound to make something that has that same kind of, like, horror suspense tension to it. And I think that probably the fact that it does require, you know, a tremendous amount of, you know, skilled contrivance is why it's not very prevalent, although, you know, it's something that the medium naturally lends itself to.
So I think just sort of to conclude and to talk about cell phones and where they're going, and cell phone videos and all mediums, I think one of the things I was sort of under the opinion that you know, technology could obviously improve. You could get better microphones, and certainly, like, I'm sure in 5 years that, you know, everyone will have an HD camera on their phone and whatever, and the little drives on there will be able to fit longer form video and stuff. But I wonder if, like, really that would do anything substantial to change what people do with it. I mean, the bottom line is, making a movie, if you're going to make a movie, you know, of any sort, like, you really want to shoot it on your cell phone? No. Like, it doesn't, you know, it's going to be really annoying, you know, like, no matter what you're doing with it.
You get a call in the middle of the take.
So, I mean, you know, it's not, I don't know if anything beyond, you know, these sort of, you know, short form, low res things are really even necessary. Because when people are sitting down and really, you know, attempting to, you know, like, really want to capture something, they'll probably actually use a real camera. So,
well, it seems like we're in this kind of like liminal technological period where, you know, an HD camera only costs $2,000. You know, a lot of people can afford them and shoot with, you know, wonderful resolutions. Cell phones haven't quite caught up, so there is all these wonderful little aesthetic genre things that are going on here. And of course, like, phones will catch up, you know, to that technology, and maybe they'll end up like running parallel, but most likely they'll probably always be a little bit behind. So that, you know, 5-10 years from now, your cell phone will be able to shoot 8 hours of HD video, but like people will be shooting in 3 dimensions and like holograms for just $2,000, and they'll be like, oh yeah, there's, you know, 3D hologram, etc. And so, like, it may be that this is just a rare period where this is the only time where it's out of sync, but it may be that phone videos will always be catching up in different ways, and this same conversation will happen just under different sort of aesthetic values.
But it's worth noting, I mean, that it's very possible that, I mean, some of the things we mentioned, I think a woman who was here earlier mentioned that there's a one moment where the guy's rolling around on the ground, and you can't, you shirt is just a blur, and you can't really understand what it is. And there's a number of other images, like Rudy Shepherd's video with his daughter, I believe, is like spinning around on a ride. Like the thing that sort of makes it work, that makes it interesting, is actually that it is blurry and it is pixelated, and you can't, you know, it is impersonal and it is, you know, removed, you know, like there's no detail there, and that's sort of what makes that work as an art form. And I mean, I think there are a couple of other pieces that are shot on, I guess, better phone cameras that have like a slightly higher resolution stuff, and they work perfectly well. But there is a little something lost in specifics and seeing specific expressions on people's faces and being able to recognize them as individuals as opposed to forms. And you know, so it is very possible that this is maybe the way that they're meant to be. Like these, and at least this genre of art that, you know, we're talking about here is being displayed here, maybe works just perfectly well in 30-second clips and low resolution.
Yeah. And then the one just sort of last concluding point that we were talking about is you know, the sort of disposability of the media, and we sort of mentioned how, you know, it's such a time and place because of the pixelation and those sort of things that are signifiers of you know, to look today, exactly. The other thing is that, you know, historically, it's always interesting to note how, you know, the kind of the ease with which you can make media, you know, obviously expands the amount of media that's made, but also generally, just technically speaking, limits the, you know, durability of that media. So that, you know, thousands of years ago, people are carving stone tablets. It's really hard to do, so there's not very many of them, but like they're still around. When you get to, you know, books and the printing press, there becomes more and more, but paper is more fragile than, you know, the stone tablets. And finally, we get to, you know, today, where, you know, things I wrote in Microsoft Word version 6 in 2003, my computer can't open anymore, and they're just kind of like files that are lost. Similarly, you know, celluloid, early celluloid deteriorates really fast. They get, you know, slightly better, where now it's like, you know, celluloid will last 150 years, maybe. These videos, it's like, you know, they're on some server that YouTube controls. Who knows if, like, there'll be a power outage and, you know, that'll go out, or, you know, any number of things.
Or YouTube will just decide to stop archiving at some point.
Yeah.
What's
that?
They're different. I mean, yeah, some of them are QuickTime files or MP4 files. I mean, different websites have different protocols. And most of the websites sort of transfer to one particular type of format. You can send multiple formats, and then they come out a certain way. Yeah.
I just want to mention, you know, what you said before about cell phones and our keys, the thing that we always have with us. I think what's really different about the cell phone is the camera that lives on your body. And if you look at that, and think about the future, and send that, tied to a delivery system, you know, what you project it on. Well, this kind of points to the body as a projection system as well. So we don't really know what we'll use it for, what we'll need it for, but it's all coming closer and closer to the surface of our body.
And cell phones may be giving us cancer.
Yeah. That's right.
You know, there's like things in like your cancer.
Talk about
like
that.
Like, you know.
Final tattoo.
Yeah, exactly. August 1st, 2008. And it was just this straight stream of like text messages written like on screen in a really poor, you know, just like text message type font, phone messages like playback and stuff like that, in a total just like chronological way. And like, so that's like the most natural representation of that, of his life via the phone. And, you know, it had this weird, you know, sort of moments to it where you're both like really engaged and you're following a text message conversation, but then it's just like aborted because, you know, they ran into each other, or like, you know, they, you know, like, forget about this. You know, and the same thing, it'd be like five photos in a row of like his nephew sledding, then like one photo of like his boyfriend in the shower, and then like three photos of something totally different. And it was just like these weird streams that were sometimes very engaging and sometimes very alienating, back and forth as like natural edits within the phone, the in camera or in the phone edits. So anyway, we thought it was, turned out to be a pretty interesting medium to discuss. So we hope you did too. And it will be just in terms of like our last bit of self-promotion, also Rooftop Films are closing next show on Friday night. And we've got just some postcards and newsletters back there that don't have descriptions of that, but you can find it all online. And, you know, I think we're just going to invite anyone who's here who wants to come. You can take one of Dan's cards as a...
So business cards in the back. Just grab one, and you're free to our show on Friday night, which is not, does not involve any cell phone videos. but it is, it's a program of service, and we'd love for you guys to come out and check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.